Welcome, everyone. This is A Brief History of Power. Colonel Grills and Dr. Koontz here to talk again about outer space. And this might be our last go-around with it. We might go in some different directions. We're thinking Seraphim Rose and NASCAR coming up, but not necessarily in the same episode. So we're gonna see what happens. But
yeah, by might be, I would say you were just being politely evasive, which I also appreciate.
It was an actual preview. Outlines are being prepared as we speak.
what we really meant was will be, because our interest in outer space wanes with the episodes. This will be a full solid month of outer space from two people who kind of don't care about it. So I hope you appreciate the sacrifices we make for you all.
As you know, deeply care about UFOs, but if you listen, you know, right. I do not believe they're from outer space. So, right. So there we are. There will be more of that coming. If you don't like it, I'm sorry. Go on the internet and complain. So anyway, how is the weather in Denver?
It is very nice. 60 degrees for the high today. And of course, it's sunny because there's no water in the atmosphere.
We're in the 50s, so Arkansas is not handling it well. We're going to need a Lutheran disaster relief to come and, you know, bring blankets and cover up the okra that's already planted.
I threatened one of my kids with Lutheran disaster relief showing up in the little vests if he didn't clean up his room yesterday. So those are going to be some busy folks.
Those are certified chainsaw operators that will come.
Good. Yeah, that I think some of my children could use that, so that's all right.
Yeah, it's good for them. Teaches them character. And, you know, somebody loses a leg or a foot, they just learn from it.
Right, that's right.
So we've gone from Russian pie in the sky theoretical astronomy and rocketry to the Wright brothers, then to actual rocketry and esoterica. And now we're going to get into the space race proper. So the one everybody thinks of, you know, we're fighting the Cold War and we're going to beat them to the moon.
Right.
And so let's talk about that. Let's open up with the space race and the journey to the moon.
Yeah, and the esoterica, honestly, I have been surprised by it in the previous three episodes as well as in this one, that it is not imported by way of, you know, kind of sticking on something found elsewhere on the internet or something. It arises naturally out of the people and the ideas behind the things involved. And that's not really different for the space race generally, or for the race to the moon for manned lunar missions specifically as a subset of that space race. When we say space race, we mean the competition that was engendered between the United States and the Soviet Union after the close of World War II, but especially after the advent of nuclear weapons. So some of the things that we talked about or mentioned vis-a-vis particularly our nuclear weapons program and the people involved and the thoughts that they had about the capacity to destroy life, those are all sitting in the background and serve as a stimulus to the space race, which is going to kick off, as we'll narrate shortly, essentially right after really VE Day, right? Victory in Europe, which of course comes before VJ Day later on there in 1945. But what you're dealing with right along the way is the reality that all of this flows directly out of World War II. And so there's a way in which, whether you're talking about the space race in the specific competition for various kinds of rockets, various kinds of payloads, first animals and then later men, after that debate is actually settled in both countries, are we going to send men? All of this, I think, falls underneath something that when you're looking at the broader scope of history, it's important to think of, which is the space race is really a continuation of competition that began really in the Second World War. Once other powers are defeated, or in the case of, say, the United Kingdom, subjugated, the space race is the primary way in which, at least publicly, the competition between the two remaining superpowers who come out of victory in World War II is going to take place.
Yeah, it's an interesting phenomenon because it involves the public so much. The public in both Russia and in the USSR and in the United States are very much behind this. It's a morale factor. the origins of this are going to get tied up, of course, in ballistic missile research, and the audience is already, herniating because we haven't talked about Operation Paperclip that much. And so we should probably go ahead and do that. Tell the folks at home about Operation Paperclip.
Yeah, the connections with World War II are simultaneously about people and about technology. And the way to understand that is to see that in very late 1945 into 1946, continuing into 1947, in the case of the Soviets, both the Soviets and the Americans are using German scientists, as well as obviously captured German technology, particularly the V2 rocket. And they're both launching V2 rockets, okay, in their respective countries. So this is like, we both ransacked a third person's house, and now we're both drinking his beer, right? In our own houses.
I
But
mean,
it's his beer.
we did that in World War I with the Mauser. Like, we were the O3 Springfield, we basically stole from them and had to pay royalties to them while shooting them with it, which I find kind of cool. One thing about Operation Paperclip that I do kind of want to clear up here is it's portrayed as if we just wholesale brought a ton of Nazis in, and it's a relatively small number of Nazis and tech that we take from the Germans. A lot of the development is by a handful of notable German engineers, but there's a lot of innovation once they get over here. I think people think of it like a sci-fi movie. We found a bunker with a bunch of super Nazi tech and then just brought it over. And then there was like a bunker full of scientists and we put them on a boat. And it's not quite how Operation Paperclip, relatively small scale compared to other things.
And the point about sci-fi is very well taken, because sci-fi, I think, is one of the primary ways that illusions about technology are created and then sustained. And the idea that the way that life works is that you have super geniuses somewhere or superheroes somewhere, and then you bring them to a secret location and then develop something out of that secret location or that secret program. The American version of what we just discussed, as that's called Operation Paperclip. The Soviets do the exact same thing. But that idea belies the fact that both the Soviet Union in the 1930s and Americans, in ways that we discussed, I want to say in the last episode, or maybe it was two episodes ago in this series, they're both trying to develop things. They just don't, for reasons that we discussed in the German episode, develop them under the kinds of constraints, but kind of, you could say, positive stresses that create the levels of innovation in rocketry that the Germans achieve in the course of the Second World War. So adding those guys into already ongoing programs, in the case of the Soviets, it had really been held up by the fact that Stalin decided to lay down sort of 1930s USSR version of DEI and fire a bunch of capable people because they were not politically reliable. Right. And so that set back their rocketry program just before the Second World War kicks off. But adding in that experience and that brain power in whatever numbers is going to be really crucial to, you could look at the addition of the Germans in both cases as jump starting or turbocharging things that were already going on.
Well, and everybody's going to be like, Wernher von Braun was a Nazi. Look, the man came to America and then immediately began to wear a Stetson for the rest of his life. So, he's an American. I'm going to give him that. We're going to claim him.
This
And a
needs to
Lutheran,
be
like
recorded. This is the absolute most charitable Colonel Grills has ever been to any German ever. So, yeah.
he and a real Lutheran, so.
Yeah, they brought this to me. This is just a fascinating little piece of history, is that they bring the Germans to Fort Bliss, Texas, which is historically where we put the largest percentage of the cavalry in order to patrol the Mexican border. My great grandfather did this in a very Keno way on a horse in like 1928. But
He wasn't asked, he just showed up.
he was not, right? He wasn't, technically, he wasn't even enlisted. It's really weird. They bring the Germans there, and then they're going to use them at something that is still pretty important, portions of which are now a national park. Very interesting, which is the White Sands Proving Ground in New Mexico. But from there, they move them to Huntsville, Alabama, and they're
Right.
rather than just launching V2s, they're going to develop what's going to be called, in honor of the Redstone Arsenal, the Redstone rocket, and that's going to be the basis for the rockets that are going to take men into space.
Which is also in a national park,
Yes, it
or a
is.
wildlife refuge, anyway.
Yes, it's a wildlife refuge, and so that it's not like you can't trace some kind of lineage out of the work of specific Germans, Wernher von Braun being absolutely the most famous one in the American context. But it's important to realize they're helping things that are already going on. The other reason to be clear about that is that I think one way that people think about World War II is that the absolute ultimate metaphysical evil is defeated. We've talked about that before in various ways on the show. Ultimate metaphysical evil is defeated. And then just coincidentally, we launch right into the Cold War.
Yeah.
And it makes a little bit more sense to understand the Second World War as competition for who will utilize the technologies of the 20th century, including now rocketry, space flight. Who will.
General Patton understood this.
Right, he did. Is that this is a competition between everyone who's involved.
Yeah.
And I can imagine a world in which, and certainly the Italians felt this way with apologies to Colonel Grylls, the Italians felt like World War II really wasn't serving them well because it was just increasing German power.
Yeah.
And that if the Germans win World War II somehow on the Eastern Front, Italy's going to be squashed sooner or later.
Yeah, they're a banana republic at the end of the war once
Right.
Germany takes over. So they knew that.
Right.
Maybe we should do an Italy episode. But anyway, neither here nor there. Yeah, it's one of the things about Redstone Arsenal I find interesting is you wouldn't expect Alabama to be the place that they do this.
You would not know.
And yet they do it. And the Alabama listeners are now like, well, why? I'm like, well, because it's Alabama. It's just not the place you expect them to put this giant research facility,
Right.
to win the Cold War. So as we get into the space race proper, I mean, we're racing to see, who's going to be the chief superpower. It is an ideological struggle, communism versus capitalism. And I'm using that very reductionistically. It's Americanism versus whatever the USSR is trying to do in many ways. America is then going to export a lot of her way of life to the rest of the world post-World War II. That's why you're all eating cheeseburgers over there and things like that. So all of those things become part of what we're trying to do. And so the space race then really becomes the public face of that.
Right.
I don't want to delve too much into is the space race fake or we're really doing it. I do think we went into space. We'll get into the moon landing. I'm not going to full on moon landing denial. However, the funniest thing about it is I think if you wanted to be a moon landing denier, the biggest piece of evidence is, and we'll get to the moon landing, but we land on the moon, all right, and we record it. Arguably the greatest achievement in human history ever, and we tape over it eventually. Like, and the claim is, well, videotape was expensive in the 60s. And so to me, I get why people get a little skeptical. I mean, not talking about like the hash marks on the picture so much, but it is kind of funny that they would. But being around a lot of a certain kind of people, I could also see them totally taping over it for cost saving measures. I could see that happening.
But I mean, we still have Sunset Boulevard. I mean,
Yeah,
of
we
all
would
the
have a
things
we would
to
have a
tape
lot
over.
of the older movies, for example, self-destructed, but also we lost a lot of them because like the MGM warehouse caught on fire. And so yeah, we were very good at preserving those things, but yet the moon landing gets it gets less respect than your sixth birthday party.
Right.
And it's kind
Yeah.
of funny.
And part of that, I think, too, is that you can find, and we might use this as the episode art. Wernher von Braun designed roughly 20 years before the Soviets developed anything like this, a really beautiful, graceful looking space station. That was his idea. I think part of the difficulty with the moon landing, which is now getting to be a long time ago, and this is something we'll talk about at the end of the episode too, I'm sure, is that the men who achieved those things, who were able to put those things into flight, who went from, 1961, President Kennedy says we're going to do this, to 1969, we actually do it. They were doing things of which the generation after them, and certainly now a couple generations after them, as far as a workforce, cannot do and has not tried.
Right.
And the farther away you get from technological achievement, the more impossible it comes to seem. I mean, this happens even with the writing of books. We are 100 years away from just a basic statement of our doctrine with contemporary
Yeah.
application in the LC-MS, and nobody's replaced it.
Yeah,
We we
you see this
have,
even in
yeah,
news articles with the AI written crap that's out
right,
there.
yeah.
And you can tell it's not written by a human, and it's written for humans who can't read.
Yeah, and the farther away that you get from actual human achievement, with obviously God-given talent, but a human being really did that, and they did the moon landing with slide rules. Okay, so they were using much less high-powered, labor-intensive stuff. The farther away you get from that, the more implausible it seems to people who are themselves dumber than those. And so they say, "Well, nobody could have done that." Well, yeah, you couldn't have done that.
Right. You don't even have a short sleeve shirt and a tie.
Right, you don't even wear a tie to work, you
Yeah,
slob.
you don't know what a pocket protector is.
Right. And so, the farther away we get from an America that is, and a Soviet Union that is simultaneously, developing the microchip and incentivizing meritocracy, particularly in the sciences. The farther away that we get from that, the more implausible and impossible it all
Right.
seems. And so I would expect that only to grow over time.
Yeah, look, I firmly believe that aesthetics are part of the reason that the space race was successful. If you design something that is at least cool looking, it
Yeah.
inspires people.
Yeah.
Our rockets don't look cool anymore. I mean, the space shuttle looked cool. And in this, we're part of the generation that we grew, at least in this incarnation, we grew up with the space shuttle.
Yeah.
It had a vibe, and it
It
just
did.
doesn't now.
It did. Yeah.
And I do think that it's really funny because this is one of those where people go, well, the market will dictate this. Well, SpaceX has not been able to duplicate what NASA can do
Right.
or what NASA did. And, because there's no real private outside of like creepy elites wanting to go into space, there's nothing driving that. And
Yeah.
you consider all the incidental technology we got from the space program, like Velcro and other things.
The Soviets were not hidden about this, but I think this needs to be stated for the benefit of Americans, is that most fantastic things that America has ever accomplished have somehow involved the federal government.
Yeah.
From Lewis and Clark to the development of railroads to the space race, it involved the government. You might not like that. You
Manifest
might,
Destiny and the
right.
Louisiana Purchase and other things.
You might want to think everything was just Ray Kroc and McDonald's,
Right.
but most of the stuff that we've achieved that has been groundbreaking or exploratory specifically, whether on this continent or another or in outer space, has somehow involved federal effort. And that's just the
Hey,
historical
you
fact.
mentioned Ray Kroc, but think about
Yeah.
this, people wouldn't be eating Chef Boyardee at the scale they were if it wasn't for World War II.
Right.
Which
I
may be good
mean,
or bad, depending,
there's no way to argue with that. There's no way to argue with that.
one of the things that fascinates me, and I will not bore the podcast with, is just Soviet engineering. Absolutely fascinated
Yeah.
by Soviet engineering and the way they were able to dual purpose parts and things like that. I mean, their economy forces them to engineer things in a completely different way from the way that America will via the Germans. Utterly fascinating. And you wouldn't have that without the government just goading people into doing it.
Right.
And it just is what it, it's just a fact. It's kind of one of those things where, I suppose the listeners will hear in us echoes of early 20th century progressives or something like that. But I actually do like the Pure Food and Drug Act. I
I
like
mean,
that.
is I think echoes is a little weak for
Right.
what we obviously sympathize with.
Like,
So
look, I like meat not killing me and the Panama Canal. That is what I'm saying.
yeah, a big fan.
10 out of 10. The market will dictate that. Yeah, okay. Let's kill enough people with tainted pork so that the market can straighten it out. Guys, the
Yep.
market existed before that. It wasn't working too well.
No, not at all. And I think this is where you have to understand that these kinds of things are always they're always interconnected. Sci-fi is currently pushing, especially in the mind of Elon Musk himself, the idea that private space exploration is the way to the future. That ignores several factors, but what it's ignoring historically specifically is that without the federal government's need to extend America's dominion, or alternatively, in the case of, the Cheyenne Mountain complex, to defend America from intercontinental ballistic missiles, we don't really have any of this. And I think that gets lost in the way that the space race is usually narrated as a set of political reactions. That Americans see Sputnik fly overhead in 1957, and then Yuri Gagarin gets to space in 1961. And we're like, oh, okay, I guess we should do this too. We were just going to eat cheeseburgers in our Cadillacs and just kind of drive around a crime-free California. But now I guess we'll go to space,
Don't
right?
make me hope.
Right. No,
Well, one of the
this was always going on. Yeah, go ahead.
one of the things that actually propelled the space race, no pun intended, was the threat of imminent destruction too. This idea that maybe we should try to colonize space because there might not be an Earth to live on.
Yeah.
And I think this is at the same time that America has the seed database. They begin that,
Yeah.
to try to make sure that seeds are preserved.
Right.
And, looking back at the Cold War, I'm not ever sure that we were really at risk of total nuclear holocaust, but the propaganda behind it was effective.
It was. Yeah, I think that's very well said, because we were always militarized in space. Na What we now call NASA, what was originally called NASA, like its predecessor, the NACA that we mentioned before, that was created at the same time as two other things that President Eisenhower got going in 1958, which is essentially what is now called Space Force, but sort of the Space Command portion of the United States Air Force, as well as something developed. And this has to do with satellites primarily, but led by the Central Intelligence Agency was the creation of the National Reconnaissance Office, which is probably one of the most important and one of the least known intelligence agencies in the whole American intelligence community. All of that comes out of specific federal effort. Yes, in that case, in direct reaction to Sputnik, but the planning for it and the technology for it predate that. Because we're always shooting for dominance, right? This is, I mean, I really think you should look at everything up to and including 1991 as essentially a continuation of the forces unleashed in 1939.
The Russians really help us in the space race because they're beating us early on,
Yes.
and Americans hate to lose.
Yes.
And now this is a conspiracy theory I wholeheartedly subscribe to.
Okay.
That the Russians were doing space exploration or attempting, at least to orbit early on, earlier than recorded, than like Gagarin and things like that.
Yeah.
Because there is some pretty good evidence that they were, like actual recordings and things like that, where they had some pretty drastically failed missions that they didn't publicize for obvious reasons.
Right.
So they were working on this well ahead of us, or getting up there well
They
ahead of
were.
us.
And that the hiccup, I guess that's a extremely mild term for summary executions in the 1930s. Of their scientists is in the whole scheme of things, or in the scheme of the larger effort, a hiccup. And I think one of the most
America
surprising.
had a more flies with honey kind of approach to their scientists,
Yeah, we did. I one of the most surprising things about the moon, the lunar manned mission race that then culminates in 1969. With America's achievement, but is then continued. Russia still keeps trying to get there. Americans still keep going there until 1972. That is really something that, if you look at everything prior to roughly the mid-1960s, you would say the Russians are going to win this because they will generally subordinate everything to efforts like this, whereas we are willing to, the nature of capitalism is not so much that the government has nothing to do with anything, as that the government is incentivizing things or offering big contracts, for example.
A good public-private partnership,
Right. Right. But we're willing to waste a lot of brain power on, developing spam, right? If that's what the market wants. So we generally move more slowly. And it is one of the I think the shocking realities of the 20th century that in the publicity war that is each country's moon program, the United States actually wins finally.
People forget for a while there, it looked like the Soviets were going to win this thing.
Yeah,
I
totally.
mean the world dominance thing. Not just
Right.
the space. If they won the space race, it's a total Harry Turtledove novel at that point.
Yeah.
And it could have happened. It could have happened. Now, but that's a broader question than just the space race. I mean, that ties into politics and Hollywood and media. And of course, the Pinkos are about to win, but they just played the long game, and so we're right back to it now. But anybody who wants to live in a Soviet kind of regime, you've got a little taste of that a few years ago. And if that's really what you want, have at it. But the problem is when I say something like USSR is the bad guy, and I do still believe that. I mean,
No.
Respect for Fidel Castro notwithstanding. But that's again more for aesthetic purposes and a desire to rule an island nation. Look, I've got the beard. You have an opening. I'm just saying, I'm ready to come down. And I'm waiting on your call. But this idea that the two options become just a completely unfettered United States, whatever name you want to put on its economy, versus a completely locked down Soviet economy. I'm not actually arguing for either the two extremes there. Simply saying that the Soviets were objectively a worse system to live under. I think
Yeah.
anybody could agree with any reasonable person could agree with that.
Right.
But that's not to say that I want child labor and poison Tylenol.
Right. Yeah. And I think one way to observe a difference is that in late 1963, in our case, 1964, in the case of the Soviets, there is regime change. So whoever you think killed John F. Kennedy, in a direct parallel, Nikita Khrushchev, who is the driving force behind the Soviet space program, and particularly the amount of funding and energy devoted to a manned lunar mission and achievement of that, Khrushchev is ousted in 1964 by Leonid Brezhnev. When you are living under a communist or a socialistic system, let's just say a Marxist system very broadly, politics matters for everything in life. So in the same way that they had been set back in the 30s by Stalin's purges, they're set back in the mid-1960s at exactly the wrong time by the fact that their head of state has changed and his priorities, or trying to suss out what does he want, what is he going to fund, is somebody going to be disappeared? That,
And if I
yeah.
yeah, go, if I get my dates right, he's there, what, 60 to 64, and then again from 77 to 82. Best eyebrows in the game. By
Yeah,
far.
right. Best eyebrows, but what is going on behind them is unclear. We have possibly a coup, depending on what you think occurred or your belief in Arlen Specter's reversing bullet theory and lots of it. But that doesn't set back our scientific program because effort can be sustained apart from the specifics of who the head of state is.
And then nobody remembers like Andropov and Chernenko.
Well,
They
they
just
were
they just
asleep, I mean, they were
yeah
the
yeah it's it, in the mind it goes from Brezhnev to Gorbachev and then Reagan.
Right.
So yeah, it, who is in power does matter, and they are totally handicapped by Brezhnev at this point. And it's probably a case of the Soviets overextending themselves. fighting all these civil wars. Of course, we're involved in those in coups, allegedly, in different ways, for different parties. But we had something that the USSR didn't, namely a ton of cash.
Right.
And our prosperity enables us to win the space race.
Right. Yeah, it's interesting to consider how the space race is really a part of the Cold War. It's not a separate endeavor. And I don't appreciate the perhaps real, perhaps fake idealism connected to space today. I think it's easy to notice how many people have NASA sweatshirts. I mean, that didn't used to
Yeah,
exist, right?
right.
Space is an incessant topic of discussion today. And connected to it is a kind of idealism about what will be found there and the possibilities to be found there that I think is not only proven to be unreal, particularly by how Soviet political realities affect their space program, but also by how all of this really is always a reflection of what is going on Earth.
Yeah.
It doesn't have an independent existence that is sustainable on its own. And I know that
Yeah.
that's the promise. And there are really cool drawings, if you want to find them, of the lunar base that the Soviets designed in their heads that they were going to
Right.
build. But none of that is sustainable. And because one of the things that is continually brought up when you think about space exploration, especially not just aviation, but space exploration generally, is whether man has a home somewhere.
Right.
And I think something that gets reaffirmed over and over and over again is, yes, this is our home. So not only does it affect us when we're trying to go elsewhere, but also it means that none of this was how, whatever idealism or whatever dream somebody in a NASA sweatshirt has today. It's not something that is real.
Yeah, and it's interesting how that gets played out because so in the 60s, you get Star Trek, which is kind of the pipe dream of what a space society would look like.
Yep.
We've
I
cured
agree.
all disease, we figured out philosophy and religion, well, mostly, Star Trek actually does tackle religion a lot, but we figured out medicine and we figured out food. So nobody wants anything. And so it's just going to be it's really a lot like, I'm a college communist and I'm going to be the poet in the commune.
Yeah, right.
I'm not going to be mining for something. I'm not going to be digging in trenches and or in mines. And so it becomes this idealistic sort of proposition that one could go to space and all the problems of the earth will not follow them, which obviously is a denial of original sin. All of the problems we would have on the earth we would have in the moon as well. And today, more than ever, at least in an open way, the connection between the occult and the esoteric in space is even more evident because it becomes not what will we find out there, but who will we contact out there and what will they be able to show us. And so it goes back to the episodes we've done about transhumanism and about contact with these creatures and what that will look like. These were there, in the early Russian science fiction and speculative kind of sciences happening. And they've just exploded today. Part of the discussion around space is what will happen to humanity when we reach some intelligence out there, when we find intelligent life. How will that change and affect humanity? That will be the next stage of evolution. Not just the travel itself. Although that's there, again, we're going to go to Mars and we're going to build a perfect society because we know what to do now, as if that's even possible. I don't mean possible to go to Mars. I mean possible to build a
Right.
sinless
Yeah, right.
society,
Right.
although modern philosophers wouldn't really use those terms. And so that's where it really becomes quite dangerous. And to go back to the point you're making is the space race is another front in a broad war.
Yes.
It comes about out of necessity, not necessarily a desire to explore the cosmos, but to beat the enemy, the terrestrial enemy.
Right.
And really, for a lot of people, it is nothing more than that. Today, because it is it's so attached to just vague exploration or leisure, I think that the pseudo space race we see today is more dangerous because of that.
Yeah, the attachment to leisure, I think, is probably bigger, and partly because of cost. You know, who can actually get into space via a private rocket? It's going to be the wealthy, but what are they going to do there, and what are the effects on them? And I think something you almost never hear about unless you do a lot of reading about astronauts or cosmonauts is how space is so obviously extremely hostile to the human body.
Yeah, I mean, you can't live out there, man. You're
Right.
gonna die.
Yeah, you're gonna die. I mean, it will cause you to waste away. And the idea that therefore some,
Almost as if there is a firmament stopping
right,
us.
yeah, right. You know, as it like this is just infinitely extendable. And so now space exploration in our time has become rather directly connected to more or less obvious varieties of transhumanism. But
And that's the thing
yeah.
about Musk, right? Like, Musk is the hero because he made Twitter
Because he's
better, they
trying
say.
to do something.
And because he's trying to do something, but
Right.
then he'll come out with like an openly satanic message, and we're just like, yeah, okay.
Yeah, no big deal.
At least I can tweet the memes I want.
I mean, in a room full of guys who are too shy to talk to girls, he is just going up and talking to her. That doesn't mean he is your nascent, you know, feudal overlord, and you know, and this should just be accepted because space exploration, you know, I mean, if it was sort of suspicious enough, or we were really just ultimately doing it for military purposes, you know, so Star Wars in 1980. In the 1980s, under the Reagan administration, was a continuation of lots of things we had been doing the whole time.
That would be the space laser program, not
Yeah.
the overrated science fiction series.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Obviously, I'm not going to presume to speak on George Lucas's creations, but if that was really ultimately the purpose of space, the idea that somehow we're going to use it to get away from this planet. What is called, I think, really beautifully, and we don't have Eucharistic prayers, at least that call themselves that in the Lutheran Church. So this is taken from old Episcopalian days.
I mean, we can bring it back. I'm working on it.
I can't remember which Eucharistic prayer it is, but it refers to this earth as our island home, picturing the earth kind of the way you would picture England, and why not, right?
By the way, that's prayer C,
There you go.
I'm pretty sure. It's numbered in Rome and lettered in
Yes,
Episcopalianism.
it is, right. That idea that man was created for the earth to have dominion over it is one that I think is generally forgotten, obviously by non-Christians, but also by Christians. And therefore, they look at something like space exploration, and it's just kind of sitting out there in an unexamined part of the universe or in an unexamined portion of their minds. And it's just something out there. These things always carry with them their own theological or metaphysical reality. And forgetting that means that you're forgetting that we have limitations. Though that are in the case of astronauts or cosmonauts, physically expressed in bone deterioration, in premature aging, in lots of things. And that's a part of the space race, the encounter with limitation, not just beating the Soviets or losing to the Americans, but the encounter with limitations that is essentially never talked about. Never. You know, the closest we ever get is when we talk about space disasters, but that just seems to be a technological failing, not a limitation on human life.
I mean, the Challenger, right? Or Columbia,
Right.
pictured as just tragedies, but can't make an omelet without breaking some eggs is usually as far as it goes. The Challenger stands in the American conscience more than Columbia does.
Yes. Yeah, well, and the ch because the Challenger was an interesting example, and now we're moving into the 80s, and by the 80s what's happening is that a model has been developed where rather than seeking out lunar missions or Mars missions, certainly manned Mars missions, we've moved to a space station model, even in some amount of technological cooperation with the Soviets, who developed the first space station, we follow with Space Lab. This will later be followed eventually by the International Space Station. And space shuttles are going to and from these things. That becomes the model. That's still sort of the model, even though we're not even running it exactly right now.
Right. Yeah, it is interesting. You mentioned the NASA sweatshirts and t-shirts that you see all the time, usually coupled with a Bass Pro cap, unrelated, you know. Well, totally related because it's just a fashion statement, but it's interesting that people want to wear the NASA garb when NASA is kind of at its nadir at this point. Like it's not doing what it used to do. And I think that that's some nostalgia for something that maybe never was there. Or maybe it was there. I don't know. But I don't mean like space in the space exploration is fake, but people wearing NASA somehow as a kid, they were really enthused by NASA.
The idea of nostalgia, I mean, when combined with the Bass Pro Shop hat is and probably like really clunky white sneakers that used to only be worn by geriatrics. All of that goes together. It's barely nostalgia. I mean, it goes along with a cultural fashion of simply quoting elements of the past,
Right.
even the ancient 1990s. But you know, by the 1990s, the fact of the American space program is that we are now doing things that the Soviets used to do. You know, if you go back to the Challenger, right? Why was that memorable? Because Christa McAuliffe was a
A teacher.
female public school teacher, right? We're doing things not because it's absolutely the most sensible thing, or because this is the absolute most talented pilot we could find. Like a John Glenn type of a person. We're doing this for political purposes.
And you actually, like, I had intentionally not mentioned that because I knew, because I got so sick of it in school, because we're both products of the public school system.
Yes,
And
sir.
how many times, at least two or three times a year, we had to hear about what Sally Ride from our female teachers, about how she was a female teacher just like me, you know. And it's like, okay, guys, it's a little bit of a selfish way to look at it's a much worse disaster because she was like me.
Well, yeah, I mean,
I mean, nothing
exact,
necessarily wrong with that, but if you said they were all white, everybody would get mad.
right. Yeah. Well, yeah, and we are now pursuing we NASA whatever is pursuing what's called the Artemis program for obvious reasons. Obviously, trying what they're specifically trying to do is to get somebody onto the surface of the moon who is not white and or not male. And
Well, we
that's
got the robot, sort of.
okay.
It tips
So,
over. I like that we can't even stick the landing on a machine well anymore.
no, we can't. So I think there's a couple of things going on now besides the sweatshirts, but of which we, you know, I mean, and you think about it, like you couldn't have sold NASA sweatshirts in 1967 because people still only wore collared shirts in public,
Right.
right? So that wasn't a market. Is that you can measure decline in a couple of ways on the basis of the sweatshirts, the Artemis program, and so on. Is that we are not we both are incapable of even replicating things, right? As well as, in addition to incapacity, we're dealing with an absolute priority of specifically political behavior rather than technological achievement. And this is something that in the Soviet program particularly sidetracked them multiple times. And I think we're expecting to somehow get better results while doing the same thing. And I don't know the specifics of whom we're hiring as engineers or what we're trying to do, you know, with gender priorities, racial priorities, whatever there. But we're dealing with a situation where we're going to try to get massive technological achievement and maybe save the human race by getting to Mars and living there, which I don't actually think is possible.
No, I
While
agree.
right, while at the same time prioritizing political matters that destroyed the Soviets several times over in their pursuit.
Like I alluded to before, we're doing what the Soviets did at a slower pace, and we're here now.
Right.
And we are in the waning days of the empire. It's not going to be fixed. And not with elections, at least. And I think the sooner we accept that, you know, the better off we are. It's kind of over. And I don't mean to black pill here, you know, coming up at the end of the episode, but Your savior is not going to come from outer space. Whether your savior is some ethereal being who appears, or whether your savior is a base on some distant planet, that's not going to save us ultimately. I think our problems are much at a much deeper level. If our problem was simply lack of resources, then yeah, maybe Mars would, or the moon would make sense. But there are no resources on Mars or the moon either, and so we just end up kind of at the same place. It's tied to the escapism that is all of our media today, and so the NASA trend is part of that. And it's why in our discourses now, we don't allude to actual things that happen for inspiration. We often appeal to fictional movies.
Oh my goodness, I know.
So the bad guy is, some Harry Potter character, and the good guy is Harry Potter or something like that.
Right.
You can't appeal to an actual example for a hero anymore, and it's completely stunted us.
Do you think that we, this is a question that came up when we were talking about the Wright brothers in my mind, and I think we talked about it, but if we did, it's worth revisiting, and if we didn't, it's worth visiting for the first time. Do you think that we are actually capable humanly, even if all political constraints, Artemis mission type priorities were removed, could we develop what we once developed?
No.
Yeah. So like
I don't think we have the people to do it.
say the airplane doesn't exist in 2024.
Can't
Yeah.
happen. I really don't think it can happen because you're talking about a different class of people. You're talking about a completely different education system. You're talking about a world that so it kind of goes back to how did all the guys in the 60s get us to space with just slide rules? Nobody believes that's possible.
Right.
And so the Wright brothers have a very interesting upbringing, but it's relatively humble.
Yeah.
Relatively, right?
Right.
You wouldn't believe that today. And all of our people who are elites are there and able to do it simply because of a large amount of money. Now, you could say that in many ways Musk made his fortune, but we both know the guy got a pretty good head start.
You got a great head start. Yep.
Bezos comes a little bit closer to being a regular guy.
Yeah.
But I think the problem was they became elites and became part of that cabal. And so that just stunts you. I mean, the end goal is to be part of the cabal, not to just simply explore. So the difference between the Wright
Right.
brothers is they are exploring, like people like the Wright brothers or Matthew B. Sellers, they are exploring for the sake of exploration. They are inventing for the sake of invention. Same thing with someone like Edison. That while there is life improvement in the background, this idea that we can leave men alone to do things is gone.
Right.
Nobody's
Right.
left alone for a minute to just think. But also the human mind is conditioned in such a different way today. I don't think we understand how different the human brain works in 2024 compared to 1913. And that's a conditional problem.
Yeah.
It comes from being raised in a very fast-moving culture that does not value pondering, that does not value slow thinking, and that truly doesn't value meaningful innovation. Meaningful innovation for us has been destroyed with the smartphone. Meaningful innovation is an app that lets you track your calories or something like that. That's meaningful innovation. We've not made great progress on cancer or other things. We've done pretty well on cystic fibrosis with one certain ethnicity. That's about it. But I think that man is fundamentally different than he was a century ago because of conditioning. I just don't think we could do it. And I think that's being proven. That is being proven with our failure rate. Do the Wright brothers fail? Yeah, they fail often, but in a very different way, and they're able to fail upwards and learn from it. It seems like when we fail today, we just keep doing the same experiment over and over. Well, this rocket blew up, but this one won't. Well, what's
Right.
different? It's a different rocket.
Yeah.
And
Yeah, and a lot of the, go ahead.
yeah, go. Well, I was just saying, I know this is a very pessimistic way of looking at it, but it would take, like any great technological achievement in history, great men need to be at the forefront of this. And I don't know if we have quite the pool of great men that we had then.
The maximization has always come by way of more funding, by way of more publicity, by way of more political support. And that's what we're giving in the Artemis program too.
Well, and it's a denial of Americans as a people. And so what are you fighting for? So if NASA is floundering or whatever because of DEI requirements, for example, that's a push toward innovation based on division that is based upon not on what's better for us, but for promoting the well-being of a certain of one group over another, interestingly.
Sure. Yeah.
Under the guise of improving society, but it's not really doing that.
Right.
And so the space race is largely successful, like we said at the beginning of the episode, because it's a morale boost for Americans and Americans are behind it. It's harder to get behind a private company doing it. And by analogy, it's kind of like traveling baseball teams or traveling cheer teams. And it's an interesting phenomenon and one that I do not understand. I can understand getting behind your high school basketball team or something because it's your school.
Mm-hmm.
There's at least something there.
Right.
But today you have a completely different model of youth sports whereby in the off season, or not even the off season, in the case of these cheer things, they have a team you pay to play on and you travel around competing in other people who are paying to play on teams.
Yeah.
Why would you have any morale concerning that? And just by way of aside, how can you have cheer competitions? Aren't you supposed to be cheering the sports teams? But no, you go around and you cheer, or you go around and you play baseball for a team that you've paid to be on.
Right.
And it has no connection to you as a people. It has connections to you paying money to the same corporation. It's the same way in scientific exploration today. And that just doesn't do the same thing for the people.
Yeah.
People might get behind the adult Happy Meal, but that's not the same thing. Right? Or the McRib rolls around and they get excited, but it's not the same thing.
No.
And I fear that that's what's happened to the space program.
Yeah,
to any kind of exploration.
I think that's right, and I do think there is a connection here with, you know, furthering your career until you get to your D2 baseball scholarship, which is only, you know, a quarter scholarship or whatever.
Right.
Is that your life is fundamentally a life of consumption.
There it is.
And innovation is a life of sacrifice, not a life of consumption. Mm-hmm.
I mean, look at Tesla. I think Tesla, you know, our favorite autist, and he...
The man, not the Ponzi scheme, right?
Exactly.
Right.
Right. Yeah, Nikola Tesla.
Right.
I think, by all accounts, he's actually concerned with, one, the consequences of technology, but he's also very interested in quality of life improvements.
Yes.
He dies alone with pigeons. You know,
right.
Or maybe even a pigeon. I don't even know if he had multiple birds or not. But that is a sacrificial life that he lived. And you could say, well, that was because he was mentally ill. No, I think some men are so singularly focused that they don't think about themselves when they do think. Maybe Tesla's not the best example that I could pull out of my hat here.
No,
but
I think he is one of the best. I think he is one of the best because he sacrifices everything progressively to move from Serbia to France to the United States, because the United States in that time is a place of nearly unlimited opportunity, which also involves sacrifice and risk, something almost nobody is comfortable with anymore.
Yeah.
But for that same reason, the opportunity is enormous. I mean, he only comes to Colorado Springs in order to achieve certain atmospheric effects to test his theory of electric transmission.
Right.
You know, he's willing to go almost anywhere to achieve what he has imagined in his mind.
And I don't think there's anything immoral about making money off these things. You know, that,
no.
That's why people get onto Edison, because he did become wealthy.
Right.
And they claim he stole inventions, but he was also a force for progress and good.
Yeah.
Ultimately,
right.
I mean, ends up being wrong on electricity, but that was more of a pride thing and a bottom line kind of thing. He'd already had his, you know, lines up and everything,
yeah,
but
right.
in a few cities. But I, there's a selfishness and an insular nature to things, which seems like I'm contradicting myself. Inventors need time to ponder, but it depends on what they're pondering on. The kind of insular life that we live today is very different, very selfish. It's looking in to see how can I make things better for just me. And so I think an example of that would be okay, to go back to the smartphone. So you're in the supermarket, right? And you're shopping. And here's the best example I can think of people preferring their own good over others is the speakerphone. And certain types of people are constantly walking around the store on FaceTime
Who are they talking
with the
to?
speaker all day. The workers. The
I
workers are there. When
don't
was that? Can you not fire them for this? They'll be like in the, dried bean aisle, just like talking
know.
away. That is an example of technology run amok, which says, I have the Star Trek phone in my pocket now, and so at all times I'm going to force you to listen in on this because that's what's better for me, and that's what's happened.
But
And I believe it'd be legal to snatch the phones and chuck them.
they should have to put them all away in the entrance, like they're going into
Yeah.
school or something.
And the phone conversations just completely perplexes me. The music does too, but the conversation's even more so.
I
And you
love
can
it.
you
I love being 2 miles deep on a trail that is going to be 10 miles long. And fortunately, I didn't feel like I was in suburbia at that moment. So somebody comes along playing top 40
Yeah,
music so that I
you
can
find it.
feel,
Yeah, even on trails today, folks, such things ought not be. And if you're doing that, if you're listening to this podcast and doing that, I'm asking you to please not do that. Even if it's our podcast, please don't play it loudly.
Yeah, we
And
disown you. We disavow.
yeah, if you're on the train and want to put your earpods in or your earbuds in, go ahead. It's a little weird to me too to walk around with your ears plugged up, but it's better than the alternative. But you could also try sitting and praying or sitting and thinking. That works.
It wouldn't hurt.
Try it out. It'll fix your brain.
It is a different vision of man. And I think that if there's anything that I hope that this month's worth of Ad Astra has that we've learned, if we didn't know it before, but certainly that I hope the listener has learned, is that space exploration and flight generally is really about man and man's wisdom and what's given to man. It's not about going to a frontier that is actually going to somehow someday, if we just get smart enough, be our home. And we are running directly up against our own limitations, not only today because of maybe how we educate or the space that we give to people, the quiet and the time that they don't have
Yeah.
because they need to be on Twitter promoting themselves or something. But it's also about what is actually given to man to do. And what I think is beautiful and underappreciated about the actual Tesla, not the Ponzi scheme, is that his desire was to use the gifts that he had been given to better the life of man.
Yeah.
That was his vision. That's, I mean, whether you believe free energy is physically possible or not, that was his vision.
Right. And so that's going to wrap up the space episodes, I think. And so get ready. We're going to go to Seraphim Rose very soon. We're going to be discussing America's third greatest sport after baseball and shooting very soon. So it's going to get fun. And it's ironically going to be somewhat related to all the things we've been talking about. So all right. Well, this has been a brief history of power. Colonel Grills and Dr. Kuntz, you know where to find us.
Are you interested in entering into or fostering a biblical marriage? If so, set aside May 3rd to 5th, 2024, and join other young Lutherans and keynote speaker Dr. Adam Kuntz, that's me, for a conference on biblical marriage at Grace Lutheran Church in Kitchener, Ontario, Canada. Come and learn what it means to have a godly marriage, participate in the divine service, meet like-minded folks, enjoy fellowship, and even learn a barn dance. We welcome singles, couples looking to get married, the newly married, and families. If you're a young couple, bring your third wheels because you just might end up with a fourth. Don't hesitate and register today at whatgodhasjoinedtogether.ca. That's all one word, whatgodhasjoinedtogether.ca. Your marriage is worth a trip to the Great White North.
Are you tired of people saying that you must accept the crumbling of Christianity? Are you looking for a place that hasn't embraced the new normal? A church that isn't taking the decline of Christian culture, families, and congregations sitting down? Are you looking for reverent liturgy and biblical teaching that proclaims the mercy of God and instructs you in holy living? Then visit Mission of the Cross Lutheran Church in Cross Lake, Minnesota, where people come for the beautiful lakes, but they stay for the church, where we are reclaiming Christendom.
Are you looking for a Christ-centered healthcare provider? One that values life no matter the stage and knows that we are made in the image of God and thus have inherent regenerative abilities? Or are you a healthcare provider looking to escape the increasingly woke system that employs you? Direct eCare can help. We are a concierge telehealth company founded by a cradle Lutheran who takes his God-given vocation seriously. We offer our patients direct, unfettered access to our providers with unlimited, as-needed telehealth services for only $35 per month or $370 per year. We are currently able to provide care to patients in the state of Idaho only, but are actively seeking providers in other states that would like to partner with us to start their own direct eCare clinic. Whether you are a prospective patient or an interested provider, you can learn more at www.directe-care.com.